This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Here with me in Studio 3 is Boston City Councilor Ayanna Pressley. And we like to check in with her to see what proposal she has on tap for the city. Councilor Pressley, welcome back.
Good to be here. Thank you, Callie.
Let's jump right into one that has intrigued a lot of us. You're talking about taking abandoned parking meters and using them as a place where people can make donations for charity. How does that work?
Well, absolutely. I filed a hearing order so that we could explore the feasibility of our replicating this program that has been successful in other municipalities. And what I'm looking to do is to explore whether or not we could repurpose old hardware, old parking meters, under the auspices of sort of a spare change for real change, to have a dedicated revenue stream that would not be impacted by our fiscal crisis, by cuts on the federal or state level, that would support substance abuse prevention, homeless prevention programs, and also grow our affordable housing stock. And so these meters would be placed in high traffic areas such as the Fenway, the Garden, commuter rail stops. And I know that our business community that is aware of this proposal is supportive because it will curb panhandling, which can be a deterrent to business. Mm-hmm. Also, we have found that aggressive panhandling has become truly a public safety issue. And moreover, for our homeless population, my constituents, I want them to get the services and the support that they need. And I don't think that that loose change in that way is the best way to support them. That could just be supporting a habit or masking mental health challenges. And so by repurposing these meters and encouraging a spirit of philanthropy in the city of Boston, I think we can establish a dedicated revenue stream to support our homeless.
I had not heard of this as a way of giving to charity, but in Denver, Minneapolis, and Baltimore, they've been doing this for a while, and it's successful. I mean, you think of nickels and dimes, but how much revenue can you actually get from what's been their experience?
Well, I mean, this isn't millions of dollars. This is monies that would supplement and enhance programs that already exist. But this is exactly why I'm looking to have the hearing to better explore what the cost would be to repurpose these meters. How many are there? How much money can they hold? Just to get a pilot program to test it, because I wouldn't want us to invest the resources in repurposing all these meters unless we had tested it to sort of gauge the level of interest and responsiveness. Also, in the other cities that you've named, there's some interesting partnerships with corporations who can sponsor a meter for up to $1,000 a year. So that is also something.
So they pay for their repurposing, and then the money goes to the charities?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. I think the city pays for the repurposing, but the companies sponsor the meters for about $1,000 a year annually. And, we'd like for local businesses to be supportive of this proposal, but I don't have a particular sponsorship amount in place as of yet. But again, the hearing will explore all of this.
So I'm just trying to get my visual thing about it. And I know you're trying to, you have much to work out in the hearing. So is there this is only in areas where there are abandoned, or would there ever be a possibility where there is a meter that's for charity and the other one is for me to pay my ticket to park there or side by side?
I think there could be both. Mm-hmm. But, again, the purpose is, one, to, foster a spirit of philanthropy, two, to establish a dedicated revenue stream, three, to curb aggressive panhandling, and four, to support local business, because that aggressive panhandling is not only a public safety issue, but also a deterrent to entering businesses. There could be, two side by side. I'm not really sure, but, our proposal at this time is that they be just in those high traffic areas like the Fenway, like the Garden, at commuter rail stops, et cetera.
Just so people understand how many meters we have currently in town, there's 8,000 on-street metered parking spaces. As you say, this would be only in high traffic areas, so not all 8,000 would be in play.
No.
But you know, that just gives you a sense, because I don't have any, I didn't have any sense of how many meters we had in the city. So that was interesting. And there's 6,000 single space meters that accept the Boston meter card as a second payment object, and 250 that are currently piloting taking credit and debit cards, which is something I see in Cambridge, where I live now. Yeah. So let's talk about this, the panhandling, which is one of the driving forces for this, and because the money would go to support that population, that homeless population.
Absolutely.
The mayor has stepped up and said, you know, we got to do something about this. And you've mentioned the businesses that are affected by it. And a lot of just average folk, I think, are. When we talk about aggressive panhandling, we're talking about what's happening on the streets, but also in cars where people approach you. I have to say, for me, approaching my car sends me into, you know, all kinds of fits. And yet, you know, you want to be supportive. There, charities have suggested in the past that there seem to be two groups of people, people who give on the street to people who panhandle, and then those of us who give to organizations whose dedicated mission is to deal with those populations. Is there a way, do you think, to persuade people to stop giving to people on the street? I mean, because that's one of the issues. Yeah.
Again, I think that speaks to a larger issue, sort of individual choice, but also culture. But I would argue that those sorts of donations, both to organizations, you know, on the street, all of them have been compromised in this economy. All of them have been compromised in this economy. People are no less caring or compassionate or benevolent, but everyone is strapped and wanting to be helpful and wanting to be helpful in the best way possible. And I'm just not certain, you know, given my work with those who have struggled with addiction and those who have not had permanent housing, that the best way to support them is to give in that way. I think it feels tangible and it feels good.
Yeah, it feels like you're doing something in the moment to a person.
You know, absolutely. Yeah. And I celebrate that. Mm-hmm. But again, we don't know how many of those people are using that money to support a habit or perhaps really are in need of mental health services.
Or there's some just grifters. Let's just put it out there.
Absolutely. And so, you know, ideally, the funding would target three major factors in fighting homelessness. So substance abuse services, that would include prevention and education programs, residential housing, and programming for reentry. Mm. Mental health services, including assessment, crisis intervention, and guidance programs, both for the individual and their family. And enhanced training services, I think this is important in terms of sensitivity, for city departments such as EMS and Boston Police. Mm. And then finally, permanent housing, including an investment in existing Boston Public Health Commission programs so that we can expand that housing stock. So I think there's some there, and we will explore, the viability and whether or not Boston is a good fit for this. But it would be my hope that the city would get on board, and that at the very least, we would have a pilot program.
I'm speaking with City Councilor Ayanna Pressley, and we've been talking about her idea that will be explored in an upcoming hearing about using abandoned parking meters for donations to charity. But before she goes, I also want to have her speak to your written piece for Commonwealth Magazine about the liquor license bottleneck here in Boston. And this is something we've heard about a lot, and I don't think a lot of people understand how much money is on the table here and how what a difference it makes for people, particularly just starting in their business.
Absolutely. Mm. And so what I'm advocating for is for the city of Boston and all of its neighborhoods, 22, to have the ability to decide how many alcohol licenses are available for restaurants and where they should go. I'm specifically looking at this from the vantage point of restaurants because I believe in the transformative power of restaurants in building community, in being economic anchors, in creating jobs. I have seen this in my own home neighborhood of Dorchester, where a restaurant like the Ashmont Grill completely transformed one blighted corner, in turn an entire block, and an entire section of Dorchester.
Fabulous restaurant. Yes.
It made our neighborhood the Ashmont area, mm-hmm. a destination location. And so I just want all of our neighborhoods to have the same equity and opportunity to build wealth, to have these economic engines. And really, I just think restaurants play a great role in building community. When we talk about the brain drain, you know, people coming from all over the world to receive an incredible education at our institutions of higher ed, I don't think that they leave just because they're in search of more affordable housing stock, which we continue to make progress in that regard, or they're looking for a job. They want to be somewhere where they want to make roots, someplace where they want to make a life. And that has everything to do with community. That has everything to do with a city that is vital and vibrant. And I see restaurants as playing that role. And nearly 70% of their revenue is made on their bar. Mm. And right now we have people that are being priced out of these opportunities because a beer and wine license can go as much as $50,000 and full liquor $450,000. You would rather invest that money in innovation, mm-hmm. in marketing. And so
in product.
Yeah. And I don't want us to lose revenue. We're so reliant on property tax. I don't want us to lose revenue and the opportunity to create jobs and to build community. So you have a neighborhood like Hyde Park or Roxbury that's struggling to get one. And then you look at a neighborhood like the North End or Austin Brighton that have such a density and they don't want any more. So you have to, I think, return control to the municipalities so that we can determine how do we economically revitalize our neighborhoods. We need the authority, and we should be making that decision for how many alcohol licenses should be available and how should they be distributed. Right now, there really is not, I hate to use that government buzzword, but there isn't transparency. Mm. We don't really have a sense as to what is the process to procure a liquor license, how many there are. And when people are having to enlist attorneys simply to navigate the process, something is wrong.
And I should mention that we had talked back when Diane Wilkerson was being going before the federal authorities, that was the underpinning reason why she actually got in trouble. She was attempting to navigate a liquor license for a local entrepreneur in one of the neighborhoods that found it difficult to get one. And it was revealed in a Boston Globe study story that one law firm was handling most of the liquor license navigation at a very high cost. So you have to begin with being a lucrative business to be able to afford the license and pay the attorneys.
Absolutely. And not many people have access to that sort of capital. And I am sensitive to, again, the density issue for neighborhoods that do not want anymore. But I'm also sensitive to those who already have licenses who are worried about that license, being lesser in value. But it's a free market. Competition is a good thing. We just need to have, a level playing field, a uniformity in the rules so that everyone has an access to this enterprise opportunity. So we have an equity across all neighborhoods. And also so that these businesses are not prohibitive in costs to small business owners. And so this is one way that I hope will reduce the cost for local and small businesses. I would also just add that, I'm very encouraged by the renaissance that is happening in Roxbury and the Dudley Square area. And the city is certainly congratulated on their commitment to bring the BPS administrative offices into the Ferdinand Building. But my concern is that if there are no restaurants in Dudley, at the end of the day, that entire population will just go home. Mm-hmm. So, I want these social venues to build community, to be cultural institutions, residents to spend their dollar there, but also to make every neighborhood a destination location. That's how we break down barriers. That's how we build community. And right now, there are very few options, whereby someone could sit down. Another restaurant I could cite as an example in my neighborhood of Dorchester, Dot to Dot Cafe. The current cost of procuring a liquor license prevents this very successful female person of color entrepreneur of sustaining Dot to Dot Cafe because people love that everything is organic and healthy. She has open mic nights, but people want to be able to have a mimosa with their brunch, mm-hmm. or a glass of wine with their dinner. So you want people to sit down and continue to, enjoy the experience and to pick other items off that menu. And she's losing business.
Yeah.
They'll come there to eat, but they can't celebrate a graduation or a christening, or an engagement.
Yeah. I want to point out that all of these things, all of these initiatives that you're looking at are ones to increase revenue and equity in the city, but you're also head of the tourism board. So you're thinking also outside, bringing folks in as well.
Absolutely.
I don't want to keep you long, as I know you have to go, but just a quick question before a political one, before you get out the door.
Yeah.
Your colleague, John Connolly, has said that he's going to run for mayor. What do you think?
Oh, my goodness. Callie.
I gotta ask.
This is what I think. I'm running for re-election. I'm focused on my own race. And, listen, what I would say about that is that this is what I've learned about the city of Boston, our political landscape is ever shifting. It is unpredictable and never boring. So buckle up.
All right. You heard it here first from Boston City Councilor Ayanna Pressley. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Callie. Always a pleasure. You do a fantastic job. Thank you.
We're going to continue the City Living conversation. Up next, Kara Miller links urbanization to global change and sustainability. I'm Callie Crossley. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.